Hey, it's Justin from Product People. Imagine you've built a product that you're passionate about, and to demonstrate its capabilities, you create a demo that attracts the attention of the New York Times legal department. They promptly send you a cease and desist letter. What do you do next? That's what's on the show today. Cody Brown is going to tell us about his experience with ScrollKit. First, I want to tell you about some great sponsors. Sprintly has been with us since the beginning. Their web app is the best way to manage the software development process. It's agile project management that works. You and your team can try Sprintly for free by going to www.sprint.ly. We have another premium sponsorship slot available if you want us to represent your product every week on our podcast, on Twitter, and our website. Visit productpeople.tv/sponsors. Now let's get to our interview with Cody Brown. Hi, I'm Justin, and this is Product People, the podcast focused on great products and the people who make them. And today, we have Cody Brown on the show. He's the co-founder of ScrollKit, and he recently found himself going head-to-head with the New York Times. Hey, Cody, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Justin, for having me.
Well, it's good to have you. Now, let's start. First, tell me a little bit about yourself. Where do you live? What's your background?
Sure. I'm originally from Colorado. I live in Brooklyn. My background is actually filmmaking. I spent years, like 12 through 19 of my life, practicing my Academy Award acceptance speech. but when I got to film school, I just got quickly obsessed with the internet, and here we are.
Yeah. How did you transition from film to the web? Was there a specific point, or is that just something that happened gradually?
Sure. I pursued both interests sometimes, you know, at the same time. Mm-hmm. The web has a lot in common with film, and that film is a kind of synthesis of a lot of different types of media. You have photography, you have sound, you have music, all of it coming together. Mm-hmm. And on the internet and in the browser, you have that massively so. You can combine, you know, photography, music, and all those things, but you have this kind of interactive element. So it, in some sense, you could see the browser as a continuation of film in some ways, but there's even more media inside of it to play with.
That's right. That's right. And this is probably a good segue to the product you've created. Mm-hmm. You're the co-founder of a company called ScrollKit, and that's the name of your product as well. What's the story behind it?
Sure. ScrollKit is a way to create powerful visual stories on the web. ScrollKit is a company started because doing this is really expensive and requires you to know how to code at a pretty high level.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to massively increase the number of people who are capable of telling these pretty powerful stories on the web. So ScrollKit as a product is our attempt to do that.
And what was the impetus to do that? Like, what was there something that happened that you felt like we've got to do this? And how did you meet your co-founder? What was kind of the genesis of the company?
Sure. Well, it's funny because we take advantage of a lot of, you know, very new browser technologies in order for the product to work.
Mm-hmm.
But you could think of ScrollKit as actually doing something pretty old and obvious, which is what you've been able to do in print for a long time, which is you can say, like, oh, I want to, like, change the page in this way. I want to move this there. So I want to be able to do that. And we started, like, so that was somewhat of an inspiration for building the product itself. was that it wasn't as it was very, very difficult to do those kind of obvious moves when you're on the web. I met my co-founder while we were both in college at NYU.
Okay.
And we were just friends there and started working together.
Huh. And did you, is this company bootstrapped or did you take some funding?
We got some seed funding a little while ago, a couple years ago.
Okay. And the company's been around for a couple years now?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you've been working, because a lot of people may have just heard of ScrollKit mm-hmm. recently, but you've been working sure. on this product for a while.
Yeah. So Kate, who is my co-founder, we've been working on projects together since we graduated college. Not all of them have been ScrollKit. We've worked on a couple of projects in the media tech space.
Mm-hmm.
This is our latest one.
Interesting. And now, and people can check this out. You actually have a live demo on the ScrollKit website. Mm-hmm. And I was just playing around with it. And it's interesting because really that for a long time, there's been kind of a print paradigm. And right. That was kind of carried over into print software. Where you could lay things out as if it was a page and you had kind of exact pixel control over where things were. You could kind of drag them around on the screen and do that. And then there was the web publishing paradigm, which, like you said, it was a lot different. It was kind of anchored in code and was, you know, you can only do so much mm-hmm. and definitely didn't have that same sense of control. But this thing that you've created, like I was just trying it out and it feels like, you know, laying something out on a page. Can you tell me a bit about like what's behind that, especially kind of like the UI and design choices you've made there?
Sure. What you just described, is very much our inspiration for this. The reason that that paradigm is old is because it's the most natural. A kid will intuitively understand what to do when you slide them over a piece of paper mm-hmm. And give them some crayons.
yeah.
But, you know, if you slide over WordPress to them, they may be a little more confused.
Mm-hmm.
So a ton of inspiration for ScrollKit was about how can we make this kind of this advanced publishing a lot more natural. And the way we do that is that we restore this basic metaphor in their mind for how this should work.
Mm-hmm.
Two distinguishing aspects of ScrollKit is that we focus directly on a single page at a time. You could think of this as a constraint. Mm-hmm. We don't have an interface for adding multiple pages like Dreamweaver or something like that.
Yeah.
We focus purely on this single page experience. And we think that inevitably makes things a lot more simple for users. The second thing, as you mentioned, is that you have pixel level control over the whole page. So if you wanted to, you can actually just draw on the page. You can draw over text, you can draw over images. And that's something that we really, that goes against a lot of people's, you know, understanding of how, you know, web publishing technology works.
That's right.
You can't make those kind of moves previously. So,
that's right. Like everything's supposed to be rigid and in its own little box.
Yeah. Yeah. So in some sense, we want to move away from like so much web publishing is just about filling in text boxes.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to move that to a canvas model. So like box to canvas is in some sense how we're thinking about this.
Yeah. And I mean, I think a lot of people have tried to solve this problem.
I think so many people have tried and failed that now kind of the overriding kind of feeling on the web is, no, we just, all we have to do is you code in a text editor and you see what's going on. Or, you know, if it's like a content management system, you fill out forms on the back end and then you click publish and then you can see what it looks like on the front end. How did you solve these technical problems? Have you restricted this to, you know, browsers that can support HTML5? What were some of the technical challenges with building this?
Sure. A lot of what we did was take advantage of cutting-edge browser technologies and make them accessible to people. To answer this question to some degree, I could back up a little bit and talk about Flash.
Okay, yeah.
So Flash was responsible for so much of this kind of interactive, more cinematic style websites back when. But Apple and Steve Jobs destroyed Flash with the iPhone and the iPad and iOS. Yeah. And pretty much in doing so, single-handedly set back the internet for this kind of experience on the internet for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
It's only recently with HTML5 and Canvas and a lot of new technologies that we're able to take some of that back and do it in a way so that that when you do it, it will actually work on the iPhone and the iPad.
Mm-hmm. And, there is definitely two sides to this, because the there's some purists out there that would say, obviously, like in the web community now, Flash is kind of like a joke.
Yeah.
And, but on the other hand, you do have creative people, or even if you've ever had to teach someone how to use like a content management system for the first time. You can see that they intuitively want that kind of control, that, I just want to draw, or I just want to move this thing here. You're right. Like on the web today, we often don't think that way. We're just kind of stuck in this one model. So is it like, will ScrollKit work in every browser, or are there some restrictions right now?
The editor works in Chrome, Safari, and Firefox.
Mm-hmm.
We focus a lot of our efforts and depth to Chrome first. We're a three-person team, so we can't be compatible with everybody.
Yeah.
But ScrollKit itself produces code that's designed to be, supportable by all of the browsers.
So that the output...
Except some low versions of IE.
Yeah.
IE can go to hell.
So the output is pretty much agnostic, but to edit these things, you're going to need a modern browser.
Yeah, Microsoft's current website looks awful in early versions of IE.
So. Yeah, that's a good point. How long did it take to build ScrollKit, and how much did it cost? Were you guys planning on... making this a business from the beginning? Maybe let's get into that.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So we've been working on ScrollKit, the product, for about a year and a half. It's taken, an incredible amount of Kate's coding ability to get to where we are. We've gone through a lot of different versions and ideas about how to do it. The editor has started out in a pretty simple way, but has, gotten a lot more advanced to the point where we can make the New York Times' Snowfall in about an hour, or a replica of it, rather.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of our business, we've pursued a lot of different options with this. We started when we first started, we saw this as a much broader consumer play, mm-hmm. because we're like, finally, like we found the obvious way that people who are as young as 7 years old can just jump in and start making a website.
Yeah.
And we saw that because we actually saw a lot of 7 year olds on the site using it in the most, you know, adorable way.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, we followed that, you know, hunch to the point where we eventually were into a partnership with name.com. And once we did that, we started getting a lot of users and traffic from them. And we started to understand that, you know, we give people an incredible amount of control with the scroll kit, you know, with the scroll kit canvas. Mm-hmm. And the scrolls that we liked the most tended to be from people who already had an eye for design. So that was at this point we have, you know, recently gone to a more pro designer end with it.
Yeah. And maybe just to back up a bit, so a year and a half of development, you have a 3-person team. Can you give us a sense of how much that costs? What does a year and a half of development with a 3-person team, both in terms of money, but also in terms of like time, how many hours have you put in?
Yeah, well, so ScrollKit has been our baby and our obsession for that, you know, entire amount of time. And that includes like, you know, marketing in addition to like designing the product and all the things that go with a startup. The answer to your question is in some sense, like, you know, you take how much salary we've paid ourselves, which in this case is, you know, a founder salary, which is very low.
Yeah.
And then you multiply that by, you know, 1.5.
Yeah. Yeah. And so those are your biggest costs are just,
yeah. Oh my God. It's people. We pay for tools like Olark, and you know, Heroku, but, that's not where a lot of the expense is. Although
yeah.
Heroku is really good at getting your money.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Heroku starts off free, but then the costs go up pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Can you give us a sense of how much it costs to host the app right now on a monthly basis?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, it can be anywhere between. I mean, we've had some months that were like $600, which is still relatively small, but like it is certainly a taxing expense.
Yeah, yeah, and you'd mentioned the New York Times. I mentioned the New York Times in the introduction, and they had this. Really cool, I guess the only way to put it is like a article on the web called Snowfall. But it was different than anything anyone had really seen before. It was a single page. You would scroll through it. And as you were scrolling through it, there's a narrative. It's telling a story in a really kind of neat interactive way. And that got a lot of play. A lot of people... you know, it got passed around on the web, and you decided to make a replica of Snowfall. Can you give us kind of the story behind that, why you did that, and then what happened?
Sure. So we were completely thrilled when we saw Snowfall, the New York Times published Snowfall. We were thrilled when they published it, and then we were even more thrilled by the response that it got.
Mm-hmm.
So Snowfall, you know, generated millions and millions and millions of page views. I think it was like 5 million page views around this point. And the response on Facebook and Twitter was just people had a, you know, either a new affinity for the Times or a renewed affinity for them.
Yeah.
And this was really exciting to us because we saw this and we're like, cool. We've been working on a tool that helps people do these kind of moves, you know, long before the New York Times started work on Snowfall.
Yeah.
So it was very much a no-brainer to create a replica of it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was, in some sense, our tribute to them. A way of thinking about it, maybe, is that, you know, we've, at that point, spent thousands of hours hand coding scroll kit so that you can make a replica of Snowfall in about an hour.
Yeah.
And so doing that, we assumed like that the Times would see this more as a cool thing, as a tribute. Then we got a cease and desist.
and what was the cease and desist was to take down the replica that you'd had on your website?
It was to take down the video that we made of creating the replica, which showed our interface for doing it. But as I said in my post about this, we understood where they were coming from in terms of, you know, their copyright argument. Like, we could have seen how it could have been fair use, but we don't really have the ability to fight them on that. But we took down the video right away. And then this is where things get, you know, more awkward, is that they then wrote back and said that we needed to remove all references of the New York Times from our homepage.
So you could no longer say, you know, ScrollKit is a product that helps you make something like Snowfall in a couple of hours.
Right. And I'm just like, really, New York Times? Like, you know, at a certain point, it's like I have a bunch of friends who are at the New York Times, and they're great. And I think the New York Times legal department is on, you know, a kind of autopilot, and it does things like this. But it was important that, you know, that we respond, and we just ask them why.
Yeah.
And that's what we did.
And you wrote a post on Medium about this that seemed to get a lot of traction. What's happened since then, since you wrote the post, both in terms of, you know, what's currently happening with the Times, and also did that generate additional interest for ScrollKit?
Sure, yeah. So the post on Medium really blew up. The last time I checked, it had gotten more than 100,000 page views.
Oh, wow.
So it brought us a ton of attention, and my inbox last week was just completely crazy. And it was a lot of people. I mean, you know, it's like to you know, maybe the credit of the Times with Snowfall, there are a lot of other news organizations who want to produce work like that. And were inspired by it, but just have nowhere near the resources of the Times to be able to do it. So this to them is a way to do that. And I would say that, you know, this to the, even to the New York Times itself, is a way for them to more rapidly put these stories together.
Yeah. Like they could be using your tool and save themselves a lot of money, or actually even just create another Snowfall, because they haven't done anything like that since.
They've done some things. But yes, no, we can help them produce these stories faster.
And so is the Times, like right now, is the Times still kind of going after you? Like they want you to remove all of those references from your website?
So, I mean, as of today, the claim in the Times went after us specifically for was the line about how we, you know, it took the New York Times hundreds of hours to hand code Snowfall, and we made a replica in an hour. That line is still there on our site, and we wrote them and asked them to, you know, why they told us to take this down, and you know they didn't, and like what legal grounds that they are telling us to take this down. And they responded with, you know, the letter that I posted to the site, which was saying like, you know, they would appreciate it.
gotcha.
And then they were just being dicks in the way they phrased it. So that is still there. So we're going to replace it because it's much better to have just another example than to just, you know, keep that there.
Yeah. Did you have a similar response from, because I remember seeing something, you did something for Time Magazine or a replica of Time Magazine. Did you have a similar response from them?
So Time, when they saw that, invited Kate and I to their corporate headquarters, and someone there just like, you know, spent the afternoon like introducing us to the whole team.
No way.
Yes. So very much an opposite response from Time. We haven't heard anything from their lawyers or anything like that. They seem to really think it was cool.
Yeah. So that's interesting. Two very different responses. Yeah. And, that's interesting. And did you get a lot of interest? Because a lot of people wonder about that. You know, if I had a post that blew up and had 100,000 views, would that help my product? Has it helped ScrollKit?
Hell yes. No, it's awesome. It's awesome just to get people on ScrollKit and, like, you know, finding bugs for us and sending this kind of reports in, which is good. But yeah, no, we've had a lot more new people hear about us, and I think what's good is that we're having a lot of people will just read the story and then start thinking about the potential of their content differently.
Yeah.
Where they can think in their head, like, okay, like, you know, like a lot of people just have like a very big story in their head that they want to tell. And they can think about a different treatment of that content for the web.
Yeah.
That's for the web.
And so I read one comment on Hacker News. Jeremy Mims said,
yeah.
I work with hundreds of newspapers and a dozen or so have contacted me to ask how they could use ScrollKit's technology. Have you been getting requests from newspapers? And
absolutely, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And can you give me an idea of numbers? Like how many newspapers are contacting you?
I don't want to say a number, but I can just say like I've been living inside of my Gmail since this post.
Yeah. There's a bunch.
Yeah. And I can say that a lot more than I anticipated.
Yeah.
Hitting us up in response to this.
Okay. And what is the business model for this? Are you going to be licensing the technology? Or is it going to be like a SaaS app where people can pay monthly? How's it going to work?
The business model is pretty straightforward. It's two things. It's a very straightforward software service per month that we work out on an individual basis with the publisher that we're talking to.
Okay.
And then in addition to that, once they're set up with that, we sell services to help people make scrolls sometimes. And so they can that's something that we haven't developed as much. But once they're set up there, they can sort of like buy a scroll a la carte.
What do you mean what do you mean by a scroll? Like you have writers and like you create content?
No, so not writers. So it's more like that they already have their idea for the story.
Gotcha.
And they have individual assets, but we have a small network of designers that can help them produce their vision.
Oh, I see. And what is so do you have paying customers right now?
Yes.
Okay. So you have people paying on a recurring basis for ScrollKit right now?
Yes.
Okay. And right now, how like, do you have a sense of when you might become profitable?
Hopefully soon. it will take a little while for us to find our footing.
Yeah.
When it comes to profits, like, you know, a lot of startups. What I'm thinking now is less about profit and more about just great use cases.
Yeah.
And how we can accomplish those.
And what's the kind of average monthly cost? Can you give me a sense of cost? Like, is this a $1,000 a month product? Is it a $20 a month product? Is it, you know, what would most people fall into?
Mm-hmm. Like I said, it's on a case by case, it's case by case per publisher,
mm-hmm.
but it's in between three and four figures for each publisher.
Okay. Interesting. Cool. And so what's next for ScrollKit? What are kind of your next steps? Where are you going to go from here?
So next steps are to continue living in my inbox and fueling off requests and things like that. But our next steps are we're looking for, again, just great use cases and, you know, really really compelling publishers with cool stories to tell, and just helping them realize their own, you know, their vision and, you know, releasing awesome stories on the web. So
yeah,
but that's pretty much, it's pretty simple. We're just looking, we're looking for more stories.
Yeah. Cool. Well, thanks so much for being on the show, Cody. Where can people find out more about ScrollKit?
ScrollKit.com is a good place.
Okay. Perfect. Well, thanks again, and we'll talk again soon.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Justin.
Well, product people, thanks for listening to this week's episode. You can follow Cody Brown on Twitter at Cody Brown. You can follow me, Justin, on Twitter at MIJustin. You can follow the show on Twitter as well at ProductPeopleTV. You can also sign up for our email newsletter. That's productpeople.tv/newsletter. If you like the show, please give us a review in iTunes. It's as easy as searching for Product People and clicking 5 stars. Next week, we're joined by Dan Martell of Clarity. We'll see you then.